We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We have Tim Grunhard on the line now, also Todd Lebo. I'm Stephen St. John. That's Jake Gutierrez. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, February 11th, 2022. Grunny, what's up?
You got the A-team up.
That's right.
Lebo, I heard that he was hanging out with Snoop Dogg during the Star on the Sidewalk ceremony yesterday. Is there any truth to that?
No. I was not involved in that in any way whatsoever.
Lebo's in Lee Summit.
I thought you were in L.A. No?
No. You could have... I would have gone out there if the Chiefs would have been in it. You could have made me go, but I don't think you could have made me go out there if the Chiefs weren't in the Super Bowl. I don't need any L.A. in my life.
Mm-hmm. You know, that sounds a lot different than back in the old days when you and I would be walking around in New Orleans and Jacksonville and all those different spots.
Hey, I'll go to New Orleans. I don't want to go to L.A.
Yeah, well, all right. Well,
remember the time, Timmy, we went to New Orleans and then we looked up and you were gone? And you're not just like gone, you went home.
I did. Well, there was an ice storm, and my wife called me and said, I have four kids under three, and I have no electricity for like 4 or 5 days. Get home. And, of course, I always do what Sarah says, as you guys know, and I got on a plane. I'll never forget, I was with Lenny Dawson. Lenny was in the airport. I walked up and said, Lenny! I said, hey, how are you getting back from the airport? Because Sarah's like, I'm not picking you up. Find a cab. This is before Uber, obviously. And, you know, go right to the, I think it was the Sheraton on the Plaza. I mean, we had no electricity, no heat, a bunch of kids. He's like, I'm going to a hotel. You need to get home. So when I got to the airport, I said, Lenny, can I get a ride home? He said, yeah, sure. I don't want to besmirch Lenny at all, but I was nervous as hell driving home with Lenny in an ice storm, if you know what I mean. It was certainly a white knuckle ride home, and yeah, you're right. I disappeared, and I think it was Thursday when I left, and then Friday morning, the guys were like, "Where are you at?" And I said, "I'm in the studio," and they're like, "When did you leave?" I said, "Yesterday," and Billy Bob, of course, has not let me live that one down. So
no, I saw Billy Bobby. I said, "Where's Tim?" He goes, "Left, went home." See, here's the deal. Bill didn't always do what he was told.
No, he didn't.
No.
And, you know, that was one of my, he's one of my mentors, and I learned a lot of good things from Bill.
Yeah.
And I learned some things not to do from Bill. So,
I still hear from my wife about how I didn't come home, and she had two kids under three and no power. And
did she think that you was going to bring power to?
He brings power, right. Stephen. You were there.
Where was
New Orleans? It was the
Rams Patriots.
Patriots, yeah. You were in New Orleans.
Yeah, I was separated from you guys. I wasn't allowed to mingle with you guys back then.
That's back when. Is that when Jason had those hard shoes on?
In New Orleans, this would have been. So I was down there for like 8 or 9 days with Whitlock.
Oh, my God.
We stayed in the same room, right?
Oh, my God.
Nice room, though. But he was battling a very painful case of the gout.
I got the gout.
And there was a lot of blood on his feet. So I stayed out of the room as much as possible. And I was hanging out with my friends,
some locals?
Yeah, Phil and Carl. Okay, so we were down there.
The D-Boys.
Right. But there was one of the most memorable nights of that whole week was when we went out with Jeff George and his wife. And so apparently we were going to Jamal Anderson's Super Bowl party. And it was at the second floor of some building. And we go up there and Jamal Anderson's there. And we were there too early, but hardly anyone else was there because somebody else was having a Super Bowl party that I guess was a bigger name than Jamal Anderson. And so not a lot of people were there. So it was me, Whitlock, Jeff George and his wife, Tom Arnold, and what appear to be two ladies of the night. And then Ludacris was the DJ for the party. And so he was there. And we mingled for a while talked.
Wow. It
was, right. You know, he's just up there, Luda. So we're there. And there's not too many people that are there, right? And so there was a wonderful spread of delicious foods that we were enjoying. And then there was a pretty bad rainstorm that was happening down there. And so then I'm looking around and I can't find Whitlock. And he had wore a new suit and he decided to wear some hard shoes, some hard dress shoes with no socks, because that was the style he was looking for, right? But he'd been battling the gout real bad, right?
Oh, God.
And so then I'm looking around and I can't find him. And Jeff George asked me, he goes, "Where'd Whitlock go?" I said, "I don't know." And so then I hear, and so there's like some windows that are open in this thing because it had stopped raining for a little bit. And so the windows are open and you hear, "Oh, yo, Steven, yo, help." I look out the window and he's standing by a cab and he's got one shoe off. He's holding it and he's going, my feet are bleeding. I'm gone. I got to go. So he gets in. It's like, what are you doing? What are you leaving me here for? So he gets in. He's holding one shoe and he gets in the cab and he's gone. And so I had to stay there. And I stayed with Jeff George's wife. Very nice people, wonderful people. And then we stayed and enjoyed some of the party. And then we eventually went home. And we got there. And so I got back to the hotel, and there was like wadded up, toilet paper and paper towels and stuff, just with blood because he had been tending to his feet.
That story was pretty good until the very end.
I had to live it, so, you know.
We had a lot of people in New Orleans. We had a lot of things going on, and not many of us knew about any of them that were happening.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wanted to know about that, did they?
We were sitting there doing the show on that one, and I remember we were doing the show. It was the afternoon, and Drake calls, and he says, "You guys can keep talking if you want, but we're off the air."
Right.
Because the ice storm had knocked the radio station off the air. I'm like, okay. So then, like, Kevin just ends up finishing the interview, and I said, "FYI, that didn't exist. There's no power at the station." He goes, "What?" And I said, "Apparently there's a big ice storm back there." And then is that when, like, Scott Traylor brought his generator to the station, and it almost inhaled all the smoke, went into the building? I don't know. It was bad news. But, hey, that's back in the day. Radio rose fun. Here's the deal. I'm glad I'm not there.
Do you remember when my dad set us up with lunch at his friend's spot?
Yes,
Frank's Deli
and Mufaletas.
And
Mufaletas.
Some people in our party were a little nervous.
Yes,
about things.
It was a little nerve wracking. Hey, it was like a 2 o'clock in the afternoon lunch too. It wasn't like it was.
Yeah, it was. They
kind of nighttime.
They opened up the back the top for us, and that was
Yeah.
He was a good friend of ours, still is.
Yeah.
Down at Frank's Deli.
You always have a good friend. You need your good friends.
That's exactly right. Okay.
Hey, Timmy, I want to ask you a football question.
Oh, boy.
Sure.
If possible. Because I think you're an interesting guy to talk to about this. Dick Vermeil's going to the Hall of Fame, right? So you retired after he got hired. Did you have interactions? What were your interactions with him? I mean, because you didn't retire till like April, right? It was like heading into minicamp, and he'd been the coach for a little while. You never played for him, but what were your reactions or interactions with him while he was the Chiefs coach for a bit?
Well, not too much as a Chiefs coach, I did a radio show with him over at the stadium, a Chiefs kind of one-on-one with the head coach for a year, which was fun. Got to know him pretty well doing that. And then, of course, remember, he was the color guy for the preseason games for the Chiefs,
right?
For a bit during my career. Conversed with him a little bit during that. And then, became kind of good friends with him. We'd go out to dinner every once in a while. But the basic conversation that we had was, are you thinking about retiring? And I said, it sounds like I don't have much of a choice. He's like, well, you know, we'd love for you to stay a part of this organization, but you need to go. So, wow. Yeah, it was, you know, they wanted a new center, and I was in my 11th year and making pretty good money, and my contract was up, and I had to make a decision whether, you know, I had a couple different offers to go to a couple different places. Chicago was one of them. Green Bay was one of them. Hatley was there. Mark Hatley was in Green Bay, and he's like, hey, come on out here. We'd love to have you for a couple of years, and then we'll make you a coach here. And, you know, I just had to make a decision between leaving and going to another place and playing for a couple of years and kind of displacing my family, or just staying here in Kansas City where I felt very comfortable and my family was comfortable. And as Lou Holtz used to say all the time, he'd say, are your kids happy? Yes, coach. Is your wife happy? Yes, coach. Don't mess with happy. So that's what I did. I didn't mess with happy. And I did the color for 4 years with the Chiefs after that. And then when they went to another station, they decided to go another direction, which was fine. But, you know, Dick Vermeil, I've always had a lot of respect for Coach Vermeil. And he is well deserving to go into the Hall of Fame. I'm glad for him. But no, I mean, it's just, you know, it's like, hey, listen, it ends for us all, some sooner than others, but it ends. And the key is really to get out when you know it. I could have probably fooled people and played for another couple of years somewhere else, but I knew that, you know, my career was coming to an end. I didn't have an ACL in my left knee, which, you know, it's pretty important to play football with an ACL. And I didn't know I didn't have an ACL until years after that. That's a whole other story.
What?
Yeah, yeah. I went to a doctor. He goes, you know, you don't have an ACL. I said, oh, really? I wonder which surgery they took it out. But
which one was it, you think?
I think it was my last one, year 10. Because I remember trying to come back from that surgery, and it just wasn't, you know, I mean, listen, I had six surgeries on this knee. So I was an expert at coming back from scopes and, you know, taking cartilage out and doing all that kind of stuff. And you know, I usually was able to bounce back pretty quick. And you know, the doctor came in and my wife said, yeah, we had to do a little bit more than we thought, but everything's fine, blah, blah, blah. Well, obviously, you know, that was part of the deal is that my ACL was torn, and whether it was torn all the way and gone or whether it just kind of went away, I don't know. But next time I went to the doctor kind of on my own to have my knee replaced, he said, you don't have an ACL. So that last year, I could tell I had to tape it a bunch just to play, and it was a hard year. And I knew that I just wasn't playing at the level that I expected myself to play at. But that's a whole different story for a whole different time. But Dick Vermeil is a great guy and very happy for him.
Well, it sounds like it.
Playing football sure sounds fun, Tim.
You know, what?
It took your ACL?
Wait,
I'm so confused by everything.
Isn't there a chance that you tore it and it degenerated so you didn't have one in there?
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of different scenarios.
I think you might have a case if they removed it.
I thought about that. I'm not a very litigious person.
No.
But, yeah, I know I talked to some people, and there's no way they proved that it didn't just kind of
right.
go away.
I mean, because you can tear it, and then it degenerates completely.
Degeneration
over,
X. A lot of people say that.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey, listen, I have no ill will. I love the Chiefs, and all the doctors that I went to, I'd go to them again. It's not that I have any issues with the Chiefs or any issues with anybody. It's just a fact that, you know, the next time I went to the doctor and had an MRI, they said, you don't have an ACL. So it might have been torn at that time. It might have been frayed. It might have, whatever it was, it was my left knee. And anybody who ever watched the Kansas City Chiefs in the 90s realized we were a very heavy, heavy run orientated to the right side team. And maybe because, you know, Will Shields is over there, which could be a part of that. That, you know, you got to push off your left leg and your left foot in order to propel yourself to the position you need to be in the running game. If you're running to the right, and when your left leg doesn't work, it makes it really hard. So, so that was something I worked through my last year, and I knew that basically it was time to go. But Dick Vermeil, you know, and he knew too. I mean, it's just part of it.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Chiefs and maybe even about the Super Bowl. We've got Tim Grunhard, we've got Todd Lebo, and we've got you right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We've got Tim Grunhard and Todd Lebo on the line. Okay, Timmy, I wanted to read something to you that we talked about earlier this week, and I'm sure people have already read this to you, but I don't know what you said, and I only care what you say on this show, so bring it. This is from GoLongTD.com, an article written by Tyler Dunn. He interviewed Eli Apple, the defensive back for the Bengals. And so for people that haven't heard this, he goes through several quotes. And, you know, on Twitter, he called Tyreek Hill a baby. He told Mecole Hardman to hit him up for tickets to the Super Bowl. And here in this article, he says he saved two tickets. He set those aside for Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman to attend the Super Bowl. And they have not taken him up on his offer. But then he gets into the game, the AFC Championship game, and talks about how the Bengals were pissed off at halftime, and even though they were down 21-10, they felt like they were in a good position because they felt like momentum had swung their way after the Chiefs had lost the opportunity to put points on the board before halftime. And so I wanted to read this to you, and I want you to tell me if there's something to take away from this. Is this just Eli Apple running his mouth now? Because I trust your opinion when it comes to things like this. He said that, let's see, KC's route concepts were all predictable. He said, we're like, we know what they're going to do. Let's just go out there and make the plays that come to us. Let's lock up. He said on the first possession of the second half, the Bengals defense got a stop, and that's when Apple felt the momentum truly shift. I was like, all right now. They're going to feel like, oh, blank, we made a mistake, and they would start pressing, and that's what they did. They got cocky. They wanted to pass. They wanted Mahomes to have the ball in his hands to get rid of us. We knew the concepts that were coming at us. Before the snap, we had a tell of what they were going to do. And then it was about beating their guys to that spot and competing for the ball. And our D-line played really great in making sure he wasn't comfortable in the pocket when he was trying to scramble and stuff. They're one of those teams that knows what they want to do, especially when they're in drop-back mode. There's only so many things they can do with different sets. It's just about their athletes being fast, and our athletes being fast, too. Who can keep up with who? And so, what's your reaction to those comments?
Well, I mean, I think the first part is a little bit of spouting off and running his mouth a little bit. And, you know, karma's a bitch, and it will come back to him.
That's right, Timmy. That's right!
You know, we'll see how that all works out when it's all said and done. But the rest of it, I agree with him. You know, I think that the Kansas City Chiefs, at times, especially when you play a team Week 17, and you play them again a couple weeks later, I do think there are some things that the Chiefs do offensively that if you break it down and you study it and you evaluate it, that different formations and different movements and different motions and different things are probably tells for teams. Well, when Tyreek Hill lines up in the slot, this is the things they like to do. When Travis Kelce lines up on the right side and steps back and moves over to the left side in motion, this is the things they like to do. So, you know, that is something the Chiefs have got to be aware of, and the Chiefs have got to get better at, because, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years, they've had a lot of success offensively with the things that they've done. And this year, teams seem to, you know, be ready for what they were trying to get done. So, but really what it comes down to is this. You had two guys. You had two guys that you have to take care of and you've got to be aware of in the Kansas City Chiefs offense. And that's Tyreek Hill and that's Travis Kelce. All right, so if you're going to drop eight and you're going to be able to get some pass rush with your front four, and they did. I mean, they didn't really particularly get to the quarterback, but they – limited Patrick Mahomes was scrambling around and buying time for guys to get open, which is all they really wanted to do, that, you're going to be able to get to those spots if, A, you have an idea of what they're trying to do, B, if they have a concept or a tell in certain formations that they're trying to get done, that you know what that is. That's just good coaching, and that's good film study. And it seemed to me that they were ready for what the Chiefs were trying to do in the second half. Maybe there were some things that they saw in the week 17, and they said, okay, once we get to this point, the Chiefs are going to try and do that, and when they do, we'll be ready for it. But this whole thing came down to one thing. It came down to momentum, guys. And the Chiefs lost the momentum, like he said, right before half, when Patrick Mahomes said, hey, listen, I want to go for it here. Instead of kicking a field goal and going up, I think 21 it would have been, let's go ahead and let's put the nail in the coffin of the Bengals and try and score a touchdown, and they didn't score. And the momentum shift that happened at that point was tremendous. And the Chiefs fed a little bit off of that same kind of momentum swing against the Chargers earlier in the year when they made a stop right before half. And the Chiefs bounced off the field, and it looked like, hey, listen, they were motivated. They didn't play very well in the first half. The second half, they came out, and they really did a nice job against the Chargers. And I think you saw the same thing with the Bengals. They bounced off the field. The Chiefs kind of shuffled off the field. You know, they didn't get those points there, and the momentum shifted. And then to his point, and I kind of felt it too, when the Chiefs punted with a three and out coming out of halftime, after they didn't get points at the last play of half, there was some concern. The momentum had certainly shifted, and the only way that you can switch that momentum is to find a way to get a turnover on defense or have a couple big chunk plays on offense. The Chiefs weren't able to do that. So the Chiefs went to something that their coaches knew that they were going to try to implement in order to get back into the game or try to get Patrick Mahomes back into the game, and they were ready for it. When you drop eight against the Chiefs, you got to be able to run the ball. And the Chiefs decided they were going to put the ball in Patrick Mahomes' hands and pass it around the field. Now, usually that's a good thing, and I'm not faulting Andy Reid for putting the ball in one of the top three, if not the number one quarterback's hands in the NFL in order to put a game away, but he wasn't able to do it. And when you drop eight and you're rushing with, or drop seven or drop eight, you're rushing with three or four, then you take away that space. And the Kansas City Chiefs offense, and I've said it all year, is predicated on finding space, finding room, finding oxygen for that play and for those players. And there was none there. They were where the Chiefs wanted to go, and maybe that was from design, or maybe it was just from number of guys that were dropping back, and they had a better plan in the second half than the Chiefs. But in saying that, I think there's a little bit of truth to what Eli Apple said, and I think he probably heard that from his coach at halftime. He said, hey, guys, listen, we know what they're going to do. We got a good feel for what they were trying to get done. We got a finger on the pulse of what this offense is going to do in the second half, and we're going to put you in a position to make plays, and all you got to do is make them, and they did, and the Chiefs didn't. And it's as simple as that. That's what it came down to.
Yeah, the Bengals coaches did a great job for sure. Eli Apple's just a loudmouth, okay? I mean, this is a guy who's been a disappointment as a professional football player. He was the number 10 pick of the draft, okay? And he's playing on his fourth team. He's been cut. He's been traded for not much. He was picked a few picks behind Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey's he's going to out-earn Eli Apple by 5 times, 10 times maybe, because Eli Apple shouldn't have been the number 10 pick of the draft. He's mouthy, whatever, but his team won, so he can talk all he wants right now. Guys like him are what make me don't like the Bengals. Now, I like a lot of guys on the Bengals. I think they play good football, and I think their coaches do a nice job, but he's not very cool. I don't like him because he's a loudmouth, and he didn't really do all that much to help the cause himself because he got beat for a touchdown. But whatever. I mean, he's going to talk, and he's going to make
trash, Lebo. Come on. I like it.
Hey, Lebo, I agree with you, man. You know, listen, they could talk trash now because they're in the Super Bowl, but the Bengals are going to turn back into the Bengals, okay? And that's going to happen. And, you know, some of this sexy talk and this cool carrying the way they carry, whether it's Joe Burrow or Eli Apple or whoever it is, the way that act's going to grow old once you, you know, win five or six games. So, you know, I also am rooting for the Bengals. I think they're going to lose the Super Bowl, but I am rooting for the Bengals. My daughter lives in Cincinnati. She's all excited about it. And, you know, the town is a buzz, and, you know, you feel good for those people that haven't, you know, the last time they won something was, you know, with Johnny Bench, a catcher. So, I mean.
Wow.
You know, so,
they won the 1990 World Series. Yeah. Come on now.
That's right.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, so it wasn't Concepcion, it wasn't Griffey, and it wasn't Morgan. It was the other crew, huh? With Ben.
Yeah, it was the Nasty Boys.
The Nasty Boys. But so they, you know, they haven't had a lot of success. But this, you know, all this stuff that they're doing and all this cockiness and everything else that right now is cool and hip, they better back it up. And now, guess what? Their schedule gets tougher, and they're going to be a little bit like the Chiefs, where people circle them on their schedule, and we'll see if they can handle that pressure. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. We shall see. But it'll be interesting to see how this team carries itself in the future. You know, anybody could, when you're winning, it's easy to talk. You know, and it's one of those deals that it's the cockroaches and the ants. And I've said this many times, you know, when the lights are bright and everything's going good, everybody when it's dark and the cockroaches are scrambling around and everything else, when you turn the lights on them and the bright lights are on them, they scatter. And the ants stay in line. They stay in formation. They stay about their business. And I many times... over the years, I've been 11 years in 11 locker rooms in 11 different situations. And, you know, when you're winning, everybody wants to be in the limelight. Everybody wants to talk on TV. Everybody wants to talk to Todd Lebo when he comes in with his little microphone and his little recorder in the locker room. But when you're losing, everybody scatters, right? They all scatter. You couldn't find anybody in the locker room, could you, Chad?
Everyone's back in that lounge.
Yeah, they're all hiding. They were cockroaches. They're hiding. You know, and that's where this team is going to learn that all of a sudden the bright lights are going to come on them, and we'll see how they react to it. But hey, listen, congratulations to the Bengals. Congratulations to Joe Burrow. You know, you got two former SEC quarterbacks going against each other, Matt Stafford and Joe Burrow. You know, both of them were, you know, first quarterback's taken. It's going to be an interesting, fun game to watch. I wish the Chiefs were in the game, but it'll be kind of nice just to worry about the food that I'm going to eat and, you know, and all the extracurricular things instead of sitting there and like sweating over watching the Chiefs play. You know, I could take a year off, but I want to get back to that next year where my team is back in it. So, I think, hey, listen, we've been in a Super Bowl the last 2 years. It's been great. We'll take a year off, take a deep breath, relax. We don't have, you know, a dog in the fight, but the Chiefs will be back. We all know that Patrick Mahomes and this Kansas City Chiefs team under Andy Reid and Brett Veach are going to be in multiple Super Bowls. We know that. We predicted that, and it's come true, and it's going to happen again. So, yeah, I'm upset and disappointed the Chiefs aren't in it. But I'm going to take a deep breath, relax, and concentrate on my guacamole dip and my wings. And then next year when the Chiefs are back in it, then I'll sit there and sweat it out again like we did the last couple of years.
You're not done, Timmy. We got a break, and you got to come back and give the official prediction. There's got to be
– Yeah, absolutely.
We got to build up to it. But just remember on this day that Tim Grunhardt compared the Bengals to Frank Lopez – in Scarface, because he called them an effing cockroach. That's right. Back after this on WHB. All right, let's go around the table here and get everyone's Super Bowl prediction. First, Tim Grunhardt, how will this game play out, and what will the score be?
Well, you know, you got to look at the personnel groups. The quarterbacks is pretty much a wash. You got a guy who's got a lot of experience who's a nice quarterback, and you have the up-and-coming star in Joe Burrow. So it's kind of a wash. I always look at the guys up front. So So the offensive line for the Rams, this is an easy one. The Rams' offensive line is much, much better than the Bengals' offensive line. And then you look at the defensive line, because I always think these games are one up front. The defensive line, the defensive front with Von Miller, Aaron Donald, and Leonard Floyd are really, really good. So I am going to go with the Rams in this game. I'm rooting kind of for Cincinnati, but I think the Rams are going to win. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to be 28-24. The Rams will win this game, and I think Joe Burrow will play well. But I just think that up front on both sides of the ball, the Rams are a better football team.
Todd Bebo.
Well, I'll just go ahead and I'll pick the Bengals. But I'll say it's going to be a weirdo score because there's going to be like a two-point conversion or a missed extra point or something weird. So let's say like 29-27.
Oh, that's a nail-biter.
All right.
Okay, all right then. Yeah. Jake,
I think we're in for a good game.
No, whatever.
Yeah,
Jake.
Blah. I will go Rams win this game 27-24.
Well, that's an exciting game as well.
Yeah.
All right.
The Rams will go up early, and then they'll almost blow it, but they won't. And Burrow will be sad.
They'll be on
the that, that sounds like a Price is Right deal. I said 28-24. You said 27-24.
He's trying to get closer. Yeah. All right.
I win.
And finally, I've got the Rams pulling this one out 58-10. On Super Bowl Sunday. So, there we go. Go Rams.
Like Gabe said, Aaron Donald with 19 sacks.
Yeah. I think he'll, I'm just going to give him, I'm going to give him 3.5 sacks.
In the MVP.
And the MVP.
Nice.
I like it.
58 to, I mean, maybe I'm being harsh. 58 to
21.
17. 52 to 17. 52 to 17. That sounds
52
better.
52 card pickup.
That feels better. Thank you, Timmy.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Todd.
You're welcome, buddy.
Thank you, Jake.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, listeners. Steven. Thank you to everyone who took part in the Border Patrol today. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back here on Monday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.